had covered over an air circulation shaft. The center had been neatly disintegrated.
Quiet, said Tullio. Can you hear that?
The sound of rustling came from outside the theater door. Yansar drew his absolver pistol.
Help me up, said Tullio, hoarsely.
Stay there, brother. Cover me from the cot. You will not regain your strength for an hour or more. Let your body heal.
There's not time. Something's coming.
Stay down.
Yansar went to the door and keyed it open, stopping it part way with a second press of the button. The room on the other side was crawling with small hexapedal robots. Flat green beams of light shone from their heads. Where they touched, matter frittered away into particles, which others of the swarm sucked up. The robots crawled over everything. A line of them entered and a line departed, carrying away their bounty as diligently as ants. They did not appear to see Yansar, and he quickly shut the door.
More of them.
Fetch me my bolt rifle, said Tullio,
gesturing weakly to the stand the gun rested on. Yansar strode across the room, picked it up, and handed it to Tullio. The veteran checked it over and racked a bolt into the firing chamber.
If they attack, grenades will be of more use, said Yansar. There are many of them.
What about my armor? It will be hard to fight like this.
It needs repair, said Yansar. We're going to need help to get out of here.
He activated the vox.
Tetrarch, this is Yansar. Respond,
he voxed. A menacing static hiss filled his hearing.
Tetrarch, we have a problem.
No contact.
Yansar held up a hand.
Apothecary,
Tullio aimed at the door. Dozens of spots of green light began to shine through the metal of the theater door.
Perhaps you'd better get up after all,
said Yansar, going to help Tullio to his feet. The vox whined.
Tetrarch!
The sound of bolt gun fire came with a distorted voice.
This is Thracian. We are under attack. We're trapped in Theater 4 of the Apothecarium. Then we are coming to you.
The door was frittering away to nothing, craters growing around the dots of light.
Hurry,
said Yansar.
Forgemaster, something approaches.
Esau datacast readings from his suit sensorium to Sebastian. A swarm of red dots crawled down towards their position on his cartograph.
The location and manner of enemy is uncertain, said Esau.
Whatever they are on the exterior of Strategic Command, said Sebastian calmly. Stand ready. I'm nearly finished. The Xenos machine infection is too widespread for me to regain control. All organic servitor components of the Fortress network are gone, but the invading Xenos network has replaced them. I have to rig the primary cogitation junction for detonation to prevent the mountain regaining control, then destroy the weapons themselves.
He looked upwards. The multiple arms of his servo harness continued to work around him.
See to it I complete the task. If we leave these weapons active, I predict all will return to functionality and be suborned by the mountain. The fleet is in danger. Destruction of this nexus must be achieved.
As you command, Forgemaster, said Esau.
Filaments of living metal lay shriveled all around the main cogitation array. He had freed it, for now, but the speed with which the strands stirred and began to reconstruct themselves suggested they would not remain sundered for long. Having removed all linkages from the surface, Sebastian found more beneath. He burned back what he could. Esau's cartilith pulsed with movement.
They are gathering above us. Concentration here.
He sent the location to Sebastian and raised his storm bolter to aim at the ceiling.
Increasing energy emissions. They are coming through.
Esau's power fist crackled into life, sending dancing blue light around the room that brought false life to the dead. Sebastian unclamped a melter flask from his thigh. He depressed a panel in the side, exposing the input jack for a remote detonator. He attached this with his human hands, while the arms of the servo harness darted and cut, driving back tendrils of the silver metal reinvading the systems. With the detonator in place, he twisted the handle on the top of the bomb to arm it, then placed it within the machine.
Forgemaster,
Esau said calmly,
I see them.
A portion of the ceiling glowed green, a faint square brighter to the center where a growing black dot spread outwards. Sebastian glanced up at the breach.
Gauss beams. I hypothesize first wave Canoptech organisms. We have awoken the guardians of the mountain, my brother.
Metal and rockcrete was being broken down into black, grainy particulate that pattered down from the ceiling like the sands in an hourglass.
"We will never be able to reoccupy this site," said Esau.
The brighter green spread to the very edges of the square. The blackness within it followed, compressing the green tighter and brighter. Though both green and black were circular, neither exceeded the limits of the square. More disrupted matter fell.
"Initiating control implosion in main batteries."
Sebastian's many hands danced over the dusty console. The first of four cylinders rose from beneath the screen. A toxin honked, followed by a machine voice.
"Warning, defense battery control system self-destruct active."
A small red cap flipped open on top of the first cylinder, revealing a data port.
"Priming first defense laser denial device. Execute."
Sebastian's data shunt stabbed down into the lock, twisted, and depressed the cylinder. Code readers chimed acknowledgement. A brief tremor shook the room as the gun blew.
"Defense laser one, inactive."
The second cylinder rose upwards and exposed its data port.
"Now this is the one that caused the trouble in the first place. The active cannon that fired upon the Tetrarch," Sebastian said.
Again his data interface slammed down. A second clarion of chimes. Another explosive rumble.
"Defense laser two, inactive."
The third cylinder was rising when Esau spoke.
"They are coming through!"
The square turned into a perfect shaft, burrowed through dozens of feet of layered armor. Something moved back at the top, the green light cast by its mechanisms shifting over the floor. A flood of robotic drones dropped through. Esau opened fire. He paced his shooting. Storm bolters were destructive, but ate ammunition greedily.
"Hurry,"
he said. He couldn't kill them all. Many of the insectoid robots exploded, but more crashed onto the floor, where they drew themselves up into a living carpet of silver. They poured in all directions, covering the floor with their undulations. A thousand green ocular sensors shone. They swarmed Esau's legs, and he stamped them flat. Where they clambered up his legs, he plucked them free from his body and crushed them in his power fist. They exploded with mighty bangs. Mandibles twitched over his plating, playing spreads of deadly light. Ceramite and plasteel dissolved into nothing. Exposed systems sparked with short circuits before they too were dissolved. Still, he continued firing.
"Defense laser four, inactive."
Sebastian hurried. The living metal of the mountain was growing back quickly, accelerated by the presence of the drones. The upper limbs of his servo harness darted into the cogitation junction, cutting and burning. The lower pair reversed themselves, switched out their utility heads for short-range plasma casters, and opened fire.
"Now the lesser batteries,"
Sebastian said. Eight more cylinders. Two went down, the charges they were connected to detonating deep within the fortress monastery and ripping out huge tranches of the control systems. Esau gave out a moan of pain. He was being overwhelmed. Silver covered him head to toe, lit by flashes of Gauss light. His stormbolter blasted a hole in the swarm, then vanished. Esau's flailing shape stood a moment longer, then collapsed in on itself. The swarm spread and flooded over the floor towards Sebastian. More of the drones were coming through the hole in the wall, bored through by the traitors during the fall of the fortress. Sebastian left the last six cylinders, took up his bolter, and turned to face his doom.
"Severing your master's link was a reckless cut, but it is done. Our guns will never be yours."
He opened fire. They came at him in a wave. He emptied his magazine into them and blasted their front rank apart. His servo arms whirled about, slaying hundreds with the energies of captive stars. There were too many.
"Detonate!"
Sebastian commanded. The melter charge in the cogitation junction responded. Fusion glow backlit the Forgemaster as he fought. Then fire ripped through the Strategium, driving the dark back into the Pharos.
Chapter 15. In the Service of Mankind. Circa 10,000 years ago. There was a problem. There was always a problem. Call lay back in his chair. Its mechanisms cradled him more effectively than his own dear mother had, centuries ago. Plush upholstery soothed his bare skin where he brushed it. Firm springs supported him. The air purification unit purred soothingly. But it was situated directly over his desk. It was always set too cold, and that spoiled everything. He couldn't think in his office. He couldn't think out on the experimental line. It was too noisy, or too cold, or annoying in any one of 100 different ways. He needed a little time to puzzle out the latest problem, but no one would give it to him. A notification clarion played softly. Before he could respond, the door opened, letting the soft noises of the experimental center into his haven. Even that was too much to bear, and he groaned.
"Not feeling it today, Director Sedaine?"
A long, thin-fingered hand fell away from Call's eyes. A headache pulsed behind them. Jespin Cruz smiled at him, winningly.
"No. Do you have to gurn like that?"
Call sat forwards. A small pre-Dark Age device sat on the glass of his desk. He picked it up and began to fiddle with it.
"I am sorry my good humour offends you," Cruz said, good-humouredly.
He was holding an active data slate against his chest. Call could only see the back of it, but the lights from the screen shone colours from Cruz's white smock coat and caught on the metal of the pens arrayed neatly in his pocket.
"What do you want? Are those targets you have there?" said Call.
"They are."
Cruz slid the slate across the desk. Call glanced at the screen and grunted.
"You are behind," said Cruz, "significantly behind."
"I am old. That's what I am, Cruz. 3 centuries weigh a man down. I need a rest."
"There can be no rest."
Cruz gave Call a look of mock sympathy. His eyes were too small for his big, bald skull, and they were lost in his sockets, which were smudged around with purple and black.
"I wouldn't bring up questions of age with him, if I were you. He's older than all of us, so they say."
"Well, he doesn't look it, and he doesn't look like he feels it," Call said.
He put the ancient device down on the desktop and gestured at it with an open palm.
"This device was made by men with a far greater grasp of science than we have. Not one person I've met can decide exactly what it was created for. Yet, if you look at it, it is simple. A spring-loaded arm, no spring now, but that's what it was. A protoplastic disc to take something, perhaps a larger disc. This groove here," he ran his finger around it, "I think it took a protective material, some kind of felt, maybe. And this,"
he picked it up and flipped it over,
"this took a motor, I'm sure. Perhaps this hole here took a lens of some kind."
"A data recording device,"
Call pointed at Cruz.
"A lot of people say that. None of them can explain why they think so or how it worked."
Cruz shrugged.
"Maybe he knows."
"He probably does. He probably saw the damn thing when it was working."
Call looked into the reflection in the glass tabletop. A face that was not his own looked back. It had a high forehead over a face that was tall overall, a downturned mouth, a long, thin nose that would have been aquiline if it didn't change its mind at the tip and turn upwards. Long hair, obviously dyed black, lay flat over his technologist's robes. It was the countenance of a vain man who was not blessed with the genes to justify vanity.
"He won't say, though, will he? He keeps his secrets close. We wallow about in the darkness of ignorance. He knows so much, but will he share? No."
"You sound disillusioned."
"I'm tired."
Cruz retrieved his slate and gave Call a stern look.
"It doesn't matter if you're tired. You have a task. You were chosen by him. He thinks you can do it. He expects you to."
"And I will," snapped Call. "I need more time. There are problems with the protein sequencing. The coding provided by the Genarchs of Cambon is incorrect. I've had to go through the whole spool and reset it multiple times. It is not I who is at fault."
"Then work quicker."
"How many test subjects do you want me to kill?" said Call. "I've run through 4 batches of volunteers and innumerable vat blanks. The carapace is stable until implantation. The same problem every time. Only the cause of death changes."
"This time?"
"The last batch spread uncontrollably and hardened prematurely," said Call, waving his hands irritably.
6 months ago, it was disintegrating."
"Well, they still all die, Cruz."
"Amar Astati will come down here next herself, you know. It won't be me.
I'm sick of that name, growled Call. Tell her I have to go back to the baseline coding again. There are more faults in there. I will find them, but I need more time.
Cruz bent lower.
Well, that you don't have, Director Sedain, he said. Work faster, or the Emperor will replace you. I'm warning you, I've seen it happen.
You mean she'll replace me?
You are serving mankind, not him, and certainly not her, Cruz scolded him.
Then I will redouble my efforts in the service of mankind, said Call sourly.
See that you do, he looked around. Nice office. It would be a shame to lose it.
Cruz bowed and departed with a polite,
good day.
Call blew out a long, exasperated sigh. This man who called himself the Emperor, he asked too much. He needed a rest. He wanted to go to the bridge, to watch the sun rise over old Myanmar, to hear the sound of the wind and the
bang.
Call.
Bang.
Belisarius call. Bang.
Friedrich lay dying in his arms, blood spilling from his mouth as he tried to speak.
Belisarius, don't do it. Please, not for me. Save yourself.
Bang.
Traitor space marines fired at him in a burning subterranean field.
Bang.
Metal in the wind.
Insignificant.
Bang.
Come to me.
Now. Call opened his eyes. He was in the power sink control node. Angled batteries were laid out in a circle around the platform. All hummed. Activity lights shone on them and on the machines that controlled them.
I am Belisarius Call, he said. I am!
Of course you are, Archmagos Dominus.
Call blinked.
Are you all right, Archmagos Dominus?
Yes, said Call quizzically. Yes, he affirmed. Size of the Emperor Fortress Monetary Citadel. Emperor's Watch. Sotha. Post-Tyranid Harvest.
That is the correct location, Quo 87 said.
His limited mind was unnerved by Call's behavior. He reached out with unsure hands to comfort, or perhaps ward off his madness. Nevertheless, he still recorded everything. Subsidiary arms worked quickly in the shadows of his robes, the stylus a blur on its data slate.
There was a voice, said Call. That was new.
He blinked again. He moved around on his giant body. It seemed clumsy and unfamiliar.
Master? The Pharos is attempting contact, real contact. I think it wants to talk. I must try a full interface.
Our equipment will be here soon, Master, Quo 87 paused.
There's not time for that. Matters are coming to a head.
Are you sure you are all right, my lord?
Never better, my dear Friedrich.
Quo 87 smiled at him sympathetically.
I am not Friedrich, Magos.
Bang.
The noise threw Call a moment, but only a moment by the measure of the Mechanicus. A sliver of a second, an iota of time. He was already formulating a dozen responses before the noise had died away and had chosen the one he would employ the millisecond it ended.
Was that an explosion? Call said.
Yansar quickly reattached Tullio's power plant. Then Tullio leaned weakly against the wall, while Yansar wrenched and heaved at the Chirurgian cot until he flipped it over. Behind this makeshift barricade, the two of them took shelter. Yansar piled up all the ammunition they had and placed their stock of grenades within easy reach. The door was almost gone. Solid metal became a lacy sculpture under the mandibles of the drones. They fringed the door all the way round, legs clamped to the wall, cones of green light emitting from their mouthparts, dissolving matter. Although there were now plenty of ways in for the robots, they ignored the space marines and concentrated on disassembling the door, atom by atom.
Necron scarabs, said Tullio. I fought their like in the War of Silence. You? My chapter was occupied with the Chicanti incursion. Did you battle their king?
Tullio chuckled dryly, wincing at the pain it caused him.
Not personally. I'm still alive. I don't think we were even in the same sector. If this is a tomb complex, then these automata will be the least of our worries, said Yansar.
Both of them spoke low, not wishing to draw the attention of the drones.
Why aren't they attacking?
They haven't registered us as a threat yet, said Tullio. I've seen whole companies of Adeptus Astartes march through tomb complexes at the first stage of awakening and be ignored, as long as they're careful. They'll consume anything, but if you get out of the way while they're busy, they won't even notice. You can even kill them.
Tullio adjusted his grip.
Then something changes, and that stops, and they attack.
So, we wait here until they attack and overwhelm us, or we wait here until they eat their way over here and consume us.
Those are the likely outcomes, said Tullio.
The scarabs withdrew, and they could see into the outer chamber. The walls were reduced to a skeleton of exposed support beams, which were being assiduously disassembled as they watched.
This world has a poor fortune, devoured by tyrannids with the bones for Necrons to gnaw. Mark the third line in the deck plating, said Yansar.
Marked, said Tullio.
They cross that, then we open fire. Grenades first into the outer chamber. You drive back the vanguard.
The last of the door collapsed into black dust. As one, the Gauss beams shut off. Green eye lights blinked in rippled sequence. Yansar's auto-sensors registered the patterning drum of alien sensor arrays tasting the room. One of the robots ventured forwards, sensing barbels stroked at the floor. Hyperplastic wings stirred.
This is it, said Tullio. Ready?
He sighted down his gun, mentally marking a target for each of the bolts in his magazine. Yansar pulled a grenade out of its looped belt.
Ready.
Other scarabs peeled themselves from the mass around the door, trooping after the first in a precisely straight line for a couple of yards, then splitting apart with geometric precision into a fan of silver. More and more of the drones joined the advancing group. They spread in hypnotic patterns. The scarabs began to deconstruct the floor. The first drone reached the third line. There were now several hundred scarabs in the room.
Now, said Yansar.
He flicked out the pin from a frag grenade and tossed it through the door. Tullio squeezed his trigger, blasting apart the first scarab into a rain of metal particles. He kept his gun in single-shot mode, aiming carefully before firing. A second scarab exploded as Yansar's grenade detonated. Dozens of damaged drones were blasted into the room, smashing Medicaid equipment into pieces. Hundreds of glowing eyes turned on them.
That got their attention, said Tullio.
An angry buzz of wings rose, and swarms of scarabs flew into the room, some aflame from the explosion. Yansar tossed two more grenades, one after the other, into the mass. Both were swarmed. The first exploded, blowing out a sphere of fire and shattered robots. The second was deconstructed before it could detonate, its energies siphoned into the abdomens of the scarabs. The space marines were both shooting. Tullio switched fire mode, emptying the entire magazine in a couple of seconds. Metal ricocheted off their armor and the walls. Tullio hissed as his bare torso was stung by chips of flying shrapnel. Yansar tossed more grenades, holding onto them till the last moment before tossing them into the swarm to ensure they exploded. The magazine dropped from Tullio's gun. He had another in place smoothly, never moving his gun from firing position, breaking his fusillade for the minimal amount of time. The swarm drew closer, the whirring of wings an aggressive buzz. Killing green light flashed between glittering mandibles. A drone clamped itself to Yansar's backpack, chewing through the arm supporting his medical light before he seized it and smashed it against the wall.
There are too many,
he shouted.
There are.
Tullio moved his bolt rifle smoothly. Each bolt claimed at least one scarab. The explosion of the micro-warhead and shrapnel from the blast taking down those nearby, they were so tightly packed.
Down to my last magazine, said Tullio.
Yansar picked up a grenade bandolier. He primed one.
For the Emperor,
he said.
For the Emperor, said Tullio.
Yansar hurled the grenade belt as hard as he could. It punched a hole through the cloud of mechanical insects and flew into the next room. A tremendous explosion followed that took out the weakened wall between the theater and the outer chamber. Scarabs were destroyed in their hundreds. Smoke filled the apothecarium. The wings fell silent.
That will not be enough, said Tullio.
Silver limbs twitched on the floor. The scarabs righted themselves.
Farewell, brother, said Tullio.
He drew his combat knife. A blast of fire roared into the outer chamber, engulfing the recovering scarabs, burning promethium, frying their systems. A second blast whooshed in. Tullio and Yansar got up and began stamping scarabs to pieces. Three scythes of the Emperor emerged from the smoke and fire, the lead bearing a flamer.
I am Brother Bokari, he said. Thracian sent me.
An explosion shook the room. Weakened metal crashed down in a nearby chamber.
Come, Bokari said. We must be quick.
They were at the top of the tree, higher than they had ever been before.
We should be getting home now, said Felix. It's near supper, and Mother will be upset if it goes cold again.
There was something bothering him, a memory that slipped and twisted just out of sight. Maybe it was because they were out too late again.
Just a few more minutes, said Nonnus. I want to look. You can see the whole world from up here.
This isn't the world. It's a dome. There's our hab block. Felix pointed through a gap in the trees to the metal skin of a slender domicile building. There were dozens of them in a spiral pattern you could only see from the air.
Is that the whole Imperium?
No, he said, looking at his brother strangely. That is just Pembria on Laphis. The Imperium is lots of worlds.
How many?
Asked Nonnus.
1 million, more or less, said Felix. It is big, the biggest, best empire in history, and the Emperor is our master.
And what is the primary constituent of its military strength?
Said Nonnus in a harsh voice. Felix looked at him sharply. The illusion flexed. He came close to remembering who he was. Nonnus blinked, his face all innocence.
I mean, the Space Marines. They are so strong. Are there lots and lots of them?
The question from his brother made Felix uneasy. Not very many, said Felix.
They are blue. I like blue.
Felix smiled.
They're not all blue. There are lots of different chapters, all different colours.
Really?
Said his brother. His manner had become strangely cold. His voice growled.
What about the warriors with the ability to wield the powers of the warp? Are there many of them?
Felix moved back from his brother.
Nonnus, what are you talking about? I want to be a space marine, said his brother, childish again.
Let's go home, said Felix, uneasily. Outside the dome, clouds were turning orange, scudding rapidly across hard blue skies, blown by step winds. Inside, shadows slunk together under the trees for their evening congregation.
All right,
shouted Nonnus. He slid off the branch and clambered down the tree with the agility of a terror squirrel.
Wait, said Felix. Careful, you'll hurt yourself.
I won't, said Nonnus.
He came to rest on a branch a few feet above the ground. Felix joined him.
I've got an idea, said Nonnus. Let's jump down.
Yes, said Felix. He tensed to leap, but he couldn't.
Why are you waiting, coward? Teased Nonnus. You won't be an ultramarine, not if you can't jump off the branch. We've done it loads of times.
All right, said Felix. I'll do it.
Let's count to three.
His brother slipped his hand into his. It was small, warm, and a little sticky. Felix squeezed it.
I love you, Nonnus. I'm sorry, he said, but could no longer recall why. I love you too, brother, said Nonnus. Are you ready?
They looked down at the drop.
One,
they began together.
Felix.
The voice came from nowhere. Felix started.
Did you hear that? Two,
Nonnus continued. His hand gripped Felix's so hard it hurt. Felix looked down and saw Nonnus's hand was skinned with shining metal. Light too powerful to contain shone through it. His own hand seemed huge, clad in armor. He blinked, and the image faded.
Tetrarch, stop! Look at me! Tetrarch!
Three!
Squealed Nonnus in delight.
As Nonnus leapt, something pulled hard at Felix, preventing him from leaping. He wanted to jump more than anything, to show his brother he wasn't scared, then go home for his meal and the warm, dull predictability of Skolem tomorrow. Nonnus dragged at him, threatening to pitch him forwards off the branch. His brother was 8 and slightly built, but for the half-second before their hand slipped apart, he felt as heavy as eternity. Then he was off balance, falling back. The forest flickered, became a cold sky full of stars. The killing drop off the roof of the Emperor's watch yawned before him.
"Fall!"
the harsh voice said.
"Fall!"
"Tetrarch!" Gathine had him, his right arm locked about Felix's left. Felix's battle plate was significantly heavier than Gathine's. He was in danger of falling to his death and taking the librarian with him. His suit's muscle systems and joints whined and growled, fighting to keep him upright. Gathine was slipping.
"Tetrarch, please!"
Felix came fully to his senses. The two of them staggered back onto the roof of the emitter tower, armor clashing together. They recovered quickly.
"How did I get up here?" Felix asked.
"I don't know. I went down into the tower. I lost a few moments. Then you were gone. I found you up here."
"The others," said Felix.
He attempted contact with the groups of space marines scattered through the monastery. Static greeted him. An explosion trembled the tower, so far deep as to be almost imperceptible, but the vibrational pattern was unmistakable.
"Where is Belisarius Call?"
Felix said to Gathine. The vox crackled. Thracian spoke.
"Tetrarch," he said, "we are under attack."
Chapter 16. Into the Pharos. Gunfire drew them together. Felix coordinated the groups of scattered space marines as best he could, gathering them in the Vigilatum. He and Gathine were first into the high chamber, chasing down the thunder of bolters from gallery to gallery. Before they reached the ground floor, Daelus, Tronchus, Alpha Primus, and Eulus came onto the mid-levels, shortly followed by Yansar and Tullio, whose armor was half removed. Some of the scythes were with them. They were firing behind them as they arrived, and ran shouting from the gallery down the stairs to the main floor. Felix joined them. The scythe of the Emperor Apothecary Aratus was helping Yansar check over Tullio, who, although he bore a number of fresh wounds on his bare skin, to go with the livid mess of his chest, seemed ready to fight.
"Where's Thracian?" he asked one of the scythes.
"I do not know," said Bukhari. "We left him in the armory to rescue your men. Be ready, Tetrarch. The enemy are behind us."
"They're coming!"
shouted Keltru. A swarm of flying constructs, thick as locusts, came roaring out of the passage.
"Fire!"
said Felix. Together, the space marines put out such a tempest of bolt fire that the swarm was shredded to pieces. Metal rained around them in sparking shards. More gunfire echoed up the lower passageways as Thracian and the rest of his men emerged in the Vigilatum.
"Sebastian!"
Felix voxed.
"Dead in the service of the Emperor," Thracian said. "Esau, too. The guns are disabled. We have brought the wrath of the mountain on ourselves."
The swarm seemed to go on forever, boiling relentlessly from the corridor and swooping down towards the space marines. The machines had no long-range weaponry, or else they would have perished. The roaring bang of bolters was deafening, even to space marines. All the extra sensors on Felix's battlesuit were confounded by the storm of metal. It was therefore a surprise when Call, accompanied by his aide, came stalking from the same lower passageway as Thracian had, aimed his weapons up into the swarm of robots, and opened fire. His solar atomizer spewed out a fat beam of searing energy that cut through the swarm and into the wall behind, vaporizing hundreds of drones. Metal fell as molten rain. Kvo-87 pulled a short stave from beneath his robes and brandished it over his head. Section after section telescoped out of the center until he held a slender, tapering staff in his hand. Call fired again. The swarm burst apart around the energy beam, twisting itself up into a monstrous spiral to avoid it, turned about, and dived. From the top of Kvo's staff, an energy shield spread, slow as syrup, running down the air around the space marines to encase them in a hemisphere. The Imperial force continued to fire, blasting apart the front of the plunging mass, so that although it drove down at them, the drones were continuously shattered into fragments that rained down thickly, tinkling loudly enough off the paving to be heard over the roar of guns and the thrum of wings. The energy skin reached the floor.
"Prepare yourselves!"
Call boomed over the drone of thousands of contragrav engines.
"For what?"
grunted Thracian. Call let his actions speak for themselves.
A metal ovoid shot out of the top of his dorsal array with a loud pop. It lofted up, where it was caught by the swarm. There was a brief flash. A punishing electromagnetic wavefront blasted out from the device, then another, then three more in quick succession. The energy shield was extinguished. The pulses hit the space marines and the tech priests hard. Kor let out an electronic squawk. Quo staggered. Felix's displays crackled off, and his power plant was knocked offline, even though his armor was hardened against haywire attacks. The space marines sagged, forced to rely on their own strength to stand in their heavy battlesuits. The Necron drones were far worse affected. The green lights burning in their eyes went out in a spreading ripple. The glow emanating from their innards guttered and died. Wings froze. Gravitic impellers cut out.
"By the Emperor," swore Thracian.
The swarm collapsed. With a crash of metal, hundreds of drones fell from the air onto the space marines. Quo threw himself down under Felix, who crouched to protect him. Tullio hunkered down, his hands held over his unarmored head. The drones battered at the warriors. They were hefty and rang from Ceramite with punishing force. Together they pummeled the warriors of the Emperor into the ground. Only Call stood unaffected, the drones slamming into his conversion field, where their mass was annihilated and converted into searing bursts of light. Felix knelt, trapped and dazed under a pile of alien metal. His armor clicked and whined as it attempted to restart its power feed. Chimes sounded. His displays blinked back on. He heaved himself up. The inert shells of Xenos drones slithered off him. Quo cowered on the ground.
"Are you all right?"
asked Felix. He offered a hand. Quo took it and pulled himself upright.
"I live," said Quo.
Space marines stirred under a silver carpet as thick as fish poured from a pelagic harvester's nets. Metal clattered. Call looked upon them all with an amused expression.
"I told you to inform me of your actions, Archmagos," Felix said.
Call chuckled.
"And spoil the surprise. There was no time."
"The phrase haywire pulse takes less than a second to voice," said Felix.
"Well," said Call, which along with a shrug was halfway to an admission of guilt, "we're all alive, aren't we?"
A mechadendrite darted from his casing and plucked up one of the robots from the floor. Its legs were curled inwards, making it look like a sculpture of a dead arthropod. Call shook it, then tossed it aside.
"All things are dependent on the motive force. That will always be a weakness, even for the Necrons," he said. "Although they are somewhat inured to these tactics, so I apologize for the strength of the pulse. Their circuitry must be burned out. It is the only way. Now we must be quick. The immediate threat is past, but the peace is temporary. A facility like this can manufacture an infinity of these devices, and worse. Now we have acted against the mountain, larger and more dangerous constructs will be awakening. Even these will not lie dead for long. Already their self-repair mechanisms begin to make good the damage caused."
"Then what is your suggestion?" said Felix.
"I have another solution to the problem of the swarms. But to effect it, we must go into the Pharos now, where I may interface with its control matrix. The longer we delay, the more danger we are in."
"Agreed," said Felix. "I have ordered the Overlord to relocate to the North Pad. We now have a way out."
"Wise," said Call.
"There is more, and you will not object to it," said Felix.
"I have ordered my ship into an anchorage geosynchronous with the mountain. As we speak, its weapons are trained upon the Pharos. If we are not out of this facility before 12 hours have passed, it will be destroyed. If we leave before then, it will be destroyed. If the shipmaster deems fit, it will be destroyed. There is no scenario, Call, that sees this mountain remaining intact."
"I agree," said Call, affecting surprise. "Why would I not? Send them these codes, and the Zarquisitor will help in the destruction. I shall have what I need by then."
Call canted a hefty spread of data to Felix. The Tetrarch tasked his cogitator to reroute it to the Lord of Vespeta.
"I am sorry, Thracian," said Felix, turning to the Chaptermaster. "I had hoped to return your fortress monastery to you, but this device is too dangerous to be permitted to stand."
Thracian and the remaining scythes of the Emperor stared at him long enough that Felix thought they would object, but then Thracian nodded.
I agree to its destruction, if necessary, he said. Nothing that has occurred here alters that. We lost our fortress monastery to one alien horror, now another awakens. Mount Pharos belongs to the past. Let the chapter find a new home now. I told you I would not object, and I do not.
I am glad you agree.
I will follow you willingly, Tetrarch, but I have a request.
Name it.
Allow us to leave you now. We must attend to our own task. Performing the last rites for our old gene seed is a matter of honor. Our chapter has come to the ending of an era. We must lay our legacy to rest.
They are hiding something. Cadmus's words came back to Felix. He almost asked them what it was. He did not. The question died inside him. Sometimes a man must bear his shame alone.
Go with my blessing, Chapter Master. 12 hours, no more. Be at the north landing pad, or die with your ancestors.
Thracian took Felix's arm in the ancient warrior's clasp, wrist to wrist.
It has been my honor to fight with you, Tetrarch. Sothara is in good hands. Destroy this place. Do not let a Necron tomb world rise here to add to the sector's woes.
Oh, said Call cheerfully. I've already said that it is not a tomb world, Chapter Master. It is something far worse than that.
Before they opened the blast doors to descend back down to the Hall of the Founder, Felix voxed Diomedes and Austin. Already, the Pharos was beginning to overcome the boosted vox signal, and he spoke hastily, ordering Austin to lead the tanks back down the mountain to Odessa Port, which was at sufficient distance to escape the destruction of the mountain. Austin would drive the lead tank, while the others would slave-link to his and proceed under the direction of their machine spirits. Diomedes he ordered to bring armor spares up into the Hall of the Founder, though he urged him to take all caution as he came within the monastery, where he would link with Cadmus and Tullio, aid Tullio in rearmament, and then accompany them to the northern pad. Tullio was too injured to fight on, and Felix feared the occurrences in the monastery may affect Cadmus's judgment. Together, the three of them were to secure the pad and await the gunship. That left Felix, Gathine, Comynus, Ixon, Tronchus, Dalus, and Yansar to accompany Call, Quo, and Alpha Primus. Thracian's depleted party made ready to leave, with their gene seed vault and their recovered dead protected by their remaining three Terminators. They all faced the blast doors, waiting for Call and Quo to override the mechanisms. Felix kept a wary eye on the mound of disabled drones, but they did not move. Finally, the tech priests were finished.
These doors will never close again once we are through. Are we ready?
Call hummed.
We are, said Felix.
Then I bid thee, machine spirits, open this door for the final time.
Felix couldn't tell if Call was being sincere or was grandstanding. It could well have been both. The door opened, and they went down wide marble stairs back into the Hall of the Founder, where Call once again busied himself at the center of the room.
Tetrarch, said Thracian, it is now that we shall part ways.
Emperor be with you, brother, said Felix.
The scythes filed past onto the downward staircase, carrying their dead. Thracian waited for the gene vault and its Terminator escort to begin its descent, then slammed his fist against his breastplate in salute.
Farewell, Decimus Felix.
With that, he turned and followed his men into the dark.
We shall not see him again, said Alpha Primus.
They may survive, said Felix.
They will not, said Primus. They do not intend to live.
Call was up against the wall towards the rear of the Hall of the Founder, running his hands and other appendages over the marble facing, still surviving.
Did you notice anything strange about Thracian, Decimus? He asked.
A mechadendrite played a scan beam over a decorated panel. Metal knuckles knocked on the stone.
He is hiding something, so Cadmus said.
What, though? Said Call. Did you not see the modifications to his armor?
There were many, said Felix. Field repairs, honors, and battle trophies.
Call looked at him while his supplementary limbs continued their work.
Really, Decimus, did you not see anything more significant?
No. Ah, well, the modifications are subtle, and so I suppose easy to miss.
I will put you out of your misery, Lord Tetrarch, said Primus, prompting a grumble from Call.
You spoil my fun, said Call, and went back to feeling the marble.
Then do you command me not to speak, Master?
No, go ahead, said Call, moving on to the next panel.
He gestured impatiently at Kvo 87 to come to his side.
Felix obviously did not see. Enlighten him.
Primus's glum manner had a hint of amusement.
The chapter master was wearing a psychic inhibitor as part of his panoply. It was situated at the back of his helmet, though I noticed it because of its effect. Thracian is surrounded by a null field.
What of it?
It is a weak field. Devices like that are of little use against battle psychers or sorcery, said Primus.
They are commonly worn by those who wish to remain unobtrusive. Criminals, petty witches. So we have to ask why a chapter master of the Adeptus Astartes was wearing it, said Call. Either he was an undeclared psyker of mean talents, which is unlikely, or we have to consider what possible benefit it could bring him in this particular place.
Are you suggesting he was seeking to block out the Gene Stealer's psychic net?
It would make sense, don't you think? Said Call. A low-level psychic field like that could be disrupted by such a device. Come on, he's wearing a psi suppressor, a null field. Why do you think that is?
I'm sure you are going to tell me, said Felix wearily.
Call reared up.
Think! That's why I'm talking to you, my boy. You think I patronize you. I do not. You have a keen mind. It is time to use it. Item one. Why is Thracian wearing a null field?
The scythes are compromised, said Felix.
It would explain their secrecy, said Call. It's only an idea, and not that I'm right all of the time, but, he said slyly, if they are, then we must address item two. What do they have in their box?
The box? It is a gene vault.
Is it? Said Call. Now, here, I think.
A short-range laser flashed at the end of a metal tentacle, scoring an X into the stone.
Alpha Primus, if you would.
Primus searched around the statues, paying close attention to their weapons.
What do you mean, said Felix, about Thracian?
All in good time. You think about it. I have finished with the subject.
Call came scuttling over to Felix.
This place is marked in the old books as Primary Location Alpha. Before it was a memorial to the scythes of the Emperor's first master, it was the center of research in this mountain. It is named in the books remaining as a tuning stage. It is an apt name. You saw the phantoms we conjured here.
They were hard to miss, Archmagos, Felix said.
Quite. Well, that was my attempt to see if the mechanisms that underpin Primary Location Alpha worked. The mechanisms of the Necrons are nothing so crude as moving parts and wires, but atomic arrangements of the utmost sublime intricacy built into the very stone. From what little remains in the library, I was led to understand that this location was irreparably damaged during the heresy. It has evidently repaired itself, to a degree. However, it does not have the full functionality that I require. Once this place could project a living being instantaneously across the cosmos, it could send information anywhere in the galaxy.
We do not require those things.
No, we require a map, said Call. I need to find my way into the belly of this machine before you vaporize it. We can't do that without a map. This facility does not exist in solely four dimensions. If we go in without a map, we will never come out. I can access the infosphere of the device, but it has yet to regain full functionality. For that, we must go deeper.
What is your ultimate goal?
To reach the center, the heart of the Pharos. This map will lead us to another map. The second map is what I seek.
Alpha Primus stopped by the statue of a chapter master, whose hand rested on the counterweight of a two-handed hammer. He grabbed the handle and heaved at it, snapping the handle halfway down and yanking the head from its seat. He hefted it as if it were a real weapon and strode to the marked section.
"Stand back, everyone!" Call shouted.
Primus hit the marked spot three times. With each strike, chips of marble flew. Upon the third blow, the hammer shattered into lumps of stone as it crashed through the wall facing. Primus discarded the sculpture and used the opening to wrench the wall away. On the other side was a surface of black stone. Halfway across the hole Primus had made, the stone turned into ferrocrete, rough with age and discolored by mineral leaching.
"Expose more, if you would, Primus," Call asked.
"Yes, master," Primus replied.
He tore down the marble with his bare hands, pulling away whole panels now he could brace himself against the hidden stone of the mountain. In a few minutes, he had revealed a plugged tunnel leading out from the hall of the founder.
"Our way is blocked," said Felix.
"Only for a moment," said Call.
He moved his immense self to the middle of the chamber and raised his hands, then dropped them.
"You asked me to inform you the next time I did anything dramatic. I am about to. In a few moments, the scarab swarm will be brought back to life, and it will come down those stairs there. They will get us into the Pharos."
"How?" said Felix.
Call raised his hands.
"The breadth of my knowledge is quite amazing, Decimus. They will get us in because they will be under my control. Now, I advise you to stand back, warriors. You don't want to get in their way."
Call smiled. He held up his arms. The mountain trembled with the activity of hidden alien machinery.
"Watch," he said.
Chapter 17. The Gates of Death. Down the stairs from the Hall of the Founder were the catacombs of the chapter. That section of the fortress monastery alone occupied parts of the alien labyrinth, the rest avoiding the Pharos's blackstone core and either burrowing through the basalt shell or built atop of it. It was dark down there and eternally silent, the perfect home for the dead. At the foot of the stairs was a broad corridor that headed down at a steady angle. For part of the way, the walls were ancient masonry, different in style to the rest of the fortress, hiding the black, uncanny stone of the Pharos. Legend had it that the Sons of Dawn had built that part of the Scythe's home. If they had, Thracian and the rest had no idea why. After a time, the ancient masonry ceased, and stonework, nearly as old but differently dressed, took its place. The work was inferior, and in those parts, tremors and the actions of Tyranids had taken part of the walls down. Behind them, the mountain's alien rock gleamed. Thracian and his men proceeded on high alert. They could have run to the tombs in minutes, but they went at a cautious pace, guns held at readiness. Every shadow was scanned and checked. Soft lightning played around power weapons. Their Auspexes and other devices were useless. The mountain throbbed now with the activity of the Xenos machines, and tremors coursed from depths to summit with predictable regularity. Hadrios had the keys to all of this. Thracian interrogated his memories, trying to place him in some context before the flight from the fortress monastery, but he could not. Nobody, it seemed, could remember Hadrios before the fall. It wasn't unusual in a chapter of 1,000 and more members, especially when elements of the Order could be away on campaign for decades, but Hadrios insisted he had been present at the monastery and had escaped himself. Perhaps he had. It was impossible to say what was truth and what was a lie. Like fools, they had accepted his story. They had accepted him, each assuming the others knew him, none of them ever checking. Not one of them had put the pieces together. When they turned their attention towards the matter of the infiltrators, their vision was obscured. They became pliant, stupid. Aratus had said repeatedly that they had had no choice, that they were victims of Xenos' conspiracy. This message formed a large part of Thracian's reconditioning. Aratus said what Hadrios had done could never be undone. Thracian refused to believe they had no choice. They had been weak. There were no innocents when it came to failure. The things he had discovered, after the full horror of the situation came to light, chilled Thracian to the core still. He felt the nullifier nestling against the back of his neck. He felt the shame it represented. He felt more at having deceived the Tetrarch. He was impure. Every shadow, every crack in the wall, every tunnel uncovered by the Pharos's shifting,
they approached as if it were an armored portal with enemies behind. It was tedious. They were chafing to get on with the mission, but Thracian trusted only the tenets of the Codex Astartes and applied Gilliman's wisdom to the letter. He did not trust his own judgment any longer. The Methylon casket and its contents must survive. There was an empty stone bier outside the gates to the tombs. It was plain, fashioned from a single piece of rock, without carvings, the only adornment a stone pillow whose edges, despite its enormous age, were still sharply defined. There were many legends attached to the bed. One said the first human settler had lain in state there upon his death. That was not widely believed. The bier had been made large enough for a space marine to lie upon. Another version of the legend said the bier had never been occupied. The same story said it was made for a traitor, redeemed, who gave his life for Abute Gilliman, and whose body had not been recovered. Another story told that it was a symbolic resting place for the vision of Imperium destroyed by Horus in his betrayal. Versions differed. Who or what the memorial had actually been meant for was lost to time. That it predated the chapter was all that was known for sure. Thracian had cared about these tales, finding the distant history of his chapter entrancing. He had written treatises on the matter. Now all he felt was embarrassment and shame when he thought of the unknown warrior, knowing that, whoever he was, he would have condemned the scythes of the Emperor for their failings. Directly behind the bier was a blackstone tunnel. Some yards away, a huge archway of Sothern basalt was worked into the width. Giant bronze hinge spikes projected from the carved supports, but the arch had never possessed gates. Fallen warriors must be allowed to pass from life to death with no barrier, or so the Sotharan belief had it. After death, a warrior should have no more gates to storm. Above the arch, in ornate script, was worked the legend, Finis Officium, Duty's End. They stopped before the gate. A faint breeze blew from below. The tunnel was repressurizing slowly, only this was not the work of the Fortress Monastery's life support systems, but the actions of the mountain.
Air, said Aratus. At this rate, there will be a breathable atmosphere within the Pharos inside a day.
The Pharos will no longer be here by then, said Thracian.
He turned to his men. The blackness of the tunnel and the tombs it held framed him.
My brothers, we stand here on the threshold of death. Each one of us has sworn an oath to see the stain on our chapter's honor removed, so that those warriors who have replaced us may carry our legacy onwards into the future without shame or fear of censure.
He looked to them all, Keltru, who had fought on through so much agony, Apothecary Aratus, who had assumed responsibility for their spiritual as well as their physical welfare, Galerius, Eulus, and Wren, who plodded implacably forwards around the crypto-vault in carefully salvaged Terminator plate with all the skill and honor of centuried veterans. Borkari, half-trained by Sebastian to replace him, and who would now never be initiated into the Machine God's mysteries. And Brother Doror, whose valiant attempts to replenish the chapter's numbers had been so treacherously undone.
We, who were once a great brotherhood, are now a tiny band, Thracian said. But in each of us exists a germ of the Emperor's will, through his gifts and his teachings and the wisdom of his son. It is but a mote, a tiny flicker in the great darkness that threatens to consume the galaxy. And yet it is mighty, strong enough to overcome the hive mind, strong enough to keep us true to who we are, despite the invidious tactics of our enemies. The future of our chapter is secure. That we must not concern ourselves with any longer. It will be a long and glorious future, but it is a future we shall have no part in, and nor should we. Once we pass through this portal, through which the mortal remains of our brethren have been conveyed for nigh on 100 centuries, we too shall be no more. We too shall be lost. We stand here as the dead. We enter these vaults and we become the dead, for though our bolters shall kick in our fists and our weapons crackle with the Emperor's wrath, we shall be dead. But in our death, we shall have our vengeance. It is time, he said. Set aside the dead. Wake our cargo.
Here and now, my lord, Aratus stood forwards.
Yes.
Then I challenge you as I must. Hear this. Once the subject is awoken, it will be impossible to put it back into hibernation.
Here and now, apothecary, said Thracian. As abhorrent as it is, we must make use of it. Time grows short.
As you wish, my lord, said Aratus. With all the solemnity the occasion demanded, he retrieved a small scythe hanging around his neck on an adamantium chain. It appeared to be a piece of jewelry, but hidden inside was a signum key. With this key, I reveal the shame of our chapter for all to see, he said. He broke the head from the scythe, activating the key. Our brotherhood is sundered by our shame, he said. Lights blinked all down the